Por quê?
I really appreciate the introduction very, very much. And while I don't think the latter part is true, but I certainly take it as a bracha that it's something for me to strive for just in terms of Avodas Hashem. So as a bracha, I'll certainly take it, and I thank you very, very much. And regarding everything else that you said, mi yodea mi machazik esmi, it's our greatest chus. A couple of weeks ago, I was asked to officiate at a levaya. Very often, or I shouldn't say very often, but often if a person passes away, could be that they came in the last part of their life to South Florida, so they haven't established themselves with any particular rabbi, or if they're not religious, they may not be affiliated with a particular shul. Anyways, every once in a while, a rebbe will get such a phone call. A couple of weeks ago, I got this type of phone call, and I was asked to officiate at the levaya. It was an elderly gentleman. He wasn't religious, and most of the people in his family weren't religious either. There was one religious daughter from New Jersey, but I knew that I was going to be speaking. Indeed, there were well over 100 people, and I think all of them not religious, so I really wanted to learn a lot about the man, say things that would be meaningful and hopefully an inspiration to those who were there. At some point, it may have even been before I started, the family wanted to thank me. So I think it was the person who passed away, I think it was his wife, she saw me coming, so she stuck out her hand to shake my hand. Now, obviously, I'm not going to take her hand, and this is not a shiur on what to do and how to handle the situation. For that, you can attend other shiurim. However, there are many ways to handle the situation when a lady will stick out her hand to shake it and not make the person feel uncomfortable at all. If my wife is there, my wife will extend her hand, so that's an obvious sign. Or if a person keeps their hand at their sides for literally a second, not more, the person gets the idea and they retract and they pull back their hand and really, virtually, you know, so they'll always say, oh, I didn't realize, I'm sorry, I didn't know you were Orthodox. And then afterwards, they will actually really, really appreciate the fact that that sensitivity still exists. But as I said, that's for a different shear. However, in this case, she stuck out her hand. Naturally, I kept my hands at the side. I continued the conversation, but wanted to keep them at the side and yet at the same time not make her feel uncomfortable. Within a second, as I told you, she realized. Now, mind you, usually the response is, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't know you were Orthodox. Here, she looked at me, she said, oh, I didn't know you were Glatt. So I said, well, I guess I am, and I certainly try to be in my dealings. But that was her interpretation of my not taking her hand. Oh, I see you're Glatt. And that was really the impetus for the title, as as it was put down, Reb Zelig, I'm very grateful that you asked me and that you put down the title, Are We Glatt? I understand last week that the Mishmar was all about Glatt in Halacha. And so what better segue is there than Glatt in Hashkafa? And I don't even know if this lady realized how much credit she deserves, because she was the impetus for a lot of what I'm going to say and a lot of what I have been saying the last couple of weeks. It got me thinking, are we glatt? Let me tell you briefly, if anybody is even slightly in tune or in touch with some of the news lately, especially if you pick up some of the Jewish papers, of some of the things that have happened just in the last couple of weeks. I'll tell you what a glatt Klal Yisrael looks like. When you read in paper after paper how in the devastation in the Philippines, literally, like in Haiti a few years ago, the first responders, bar none, they came from Israel, they set up field hospitals, treated people quicker and more efficiently than others, and were the first to deliver all of the babies that needed to be delivered. And the other nations, then those from Haiti, now those from the Philippines, were so grateful to the Israelis that they named every single kid that was born Israel. Now, I don't think they're getting any aliyah to the Torah anytime soon. But that's certainly something that the world takes notice of when we're glatt. It happened then in Haiti, it happened now in the Philippines, and a lot of the world, or at least certainly those who are being helped, are incredulous. In fact, just as a not such a side note, a couple of years ago, for a few months, the Brenner family lived in North Miami Beach. They came from Eretz Yisrael. You may remember Professor Brenner. He had a long beard and a big yarmulke. And before he was going back, he went to a computer store on 163rd Street to get a piece for his computer. And it was raining, almost a little bit like it is tonight, and he rang the bell to get in. On the other side of the door, like in front of the counter, was an African-American gentleman. And at first he didn't open the door. After a few minutes he did. And the first thing that he said to Professor Brenner is, "Thank you so much." So Brenner figured that he was thanking him because this must be the owner of the store. And he thanked him that I didn't leave even though I didn't get in the first few minutes. And he told that to the African-American man. He said, "No, that's not why I'm thanking." He said, "What are you thanking me for?" He says, "Oh," this was after the Haiti episode. He says, "Aren't you from Israel?" He said, "Yeah." He said, "I could tell with the beard and the thing you're wearing on your head. So what do you mean what I'm saying thank you for? I'm from Haiti. And I'm thanking you for exactly what you and others like you did for my people." And he went on to express some of the exact thoughts that I just told you vis-a-vis the Philippines. At that point, Professor Brenner said, "You know, it's actually a breath of fresh air to hear you say that, because in the news and the media and the stories, that's usually not the coverage me and my people get. It's usually one story after another that does not portray us the way you're expressing," at which point he turned to Brenner, like you would almost thought it was a zug from a Musser Sefer. He said, "Don't get bogged down with what the news and the media and the papers and the reporters are saying. You and your people keep doing what you're doing so magnificently. That's the right thing." It's almost like he would borrow the lady's term, "You gotta be glatt. And even if the rest of the world is still going to say whatever it is, you keep doing exactly what you've been doing." And at least he took notice. And the same thing happened now with the devastation in the Philippines. It brings to mind that years ago, I don't remember seeing the entry, but apparently in one of the earlier dictionaries, it had the word Jew. And the definition was something like to be dishonest, to Jew someone, to be dishonest in business. And after that entry in the dictionary, people were up in arms and let's protest this way and that way and rally ahina her. Reb Shimon Schwab said, "You're right, you got to do something. I'll tell you what to do. Next year when the dictionary comes out and has the word Jew, make sure that the definition now says to be meticulously and scrupulously honest in business. That's what you should do. You got to be glatt. And the world will notice, the world won't notice. It's irrelevant, it's simply immaterial." And so this lady got me thinking, all are of our actions something that are Marbe Kvod Shamayim. Are we glatt? Two other stories that certainly made it to the news in large detail the last couple of weeks. And I had a chance to mention these stories this past Shabbos in Shul. And not only were people familiar with the stories, but the feedback and the positive sensation that it generated was overwhelming. I'm sure most of us are familiar with one story about a Rebbe from New Haven, Rabbi Noach Muroff, if I'm pronouncing it correctly, M-U-R-O-F-F. Right? I'm sure since the story we all ran to buy a desk. And if you laughed, then you know the story. And if you didn't, you have no idea what I'm talking about. But this young Rebbe needed a desk, so on Craigslist, from a woman named Patty, he bought a desk for $150. It didn't properly fit in his door, so he had to take it apart a little bit to remove some of the drawers, and upon doing so, a bag of money fell out from the desk that he now dismantled, bought on Craigslist for $150 from a non-Jewish woman named Patty. He sits down and he counts it, and it is $98,000, just south of $100,000 cash. Now, I want to tell you something. 16 years ago when I came to North Miami Beach, I also needed a desk. Now, I didn't get it on Craigslist, but I did get it on one of the warehouses off 95 North. And my desk also didn't fit in my side door. And just like this Rebbe, I took part of it apart and part of the door apart, removed the drawers, but that's where the similarities end. There was no money. But this Rebbe came upon the money, and obviously he realized right away the Kiddush Hashem that could come about, and he was going to return the money the next day. In fact, he told her about it. And she said she was beside herself. Her parents had recently died. This was the entire inheritance. She didn't put it in the bank. She hid it there. She forgot about it. You could only imagine how overwhelmed she was with appreciation. The next day, he takes his Kinderlach, 6, 4, 3, and 1, four kids, to return it and be part of this monumental Kiddush Hashem. By the way, this happened around Rosh Hashanah time. He himself wasn't going to make the story public, but about a month ago when he was at the New England Torah Masorah Convention, which I myself had the schus of participating in, together with the Philadelphia Rosh Hashiva Zoller Gesund und Stark Sein, he told the story to Reb Shmuel. And Reb Shmuel said, take it public because it's a massive Kiddush Hashem. And so he went ahead and he, on the way, wanted to explain to his children the concept of what $100,000 is so that they can really appreciate what it means to return it. Now, I'm going to digress for about 60 seconds just to give my own editorial on the story or this part of it. I mentioned it, this story multiple times, and I keep saying the same thing. One could safely say for a young Rebbe to return about $100,000, I keep saying it's probably 2 years of his salary, and others say I'm wrong. It might even be 3 years of salary. And that's if they get paid on time. And I will add, and recently somebody told me I should and others should speak about it more often. I've often said, there's no profession, there's no one that you could tell me that deserves to get paid a higher salary than a Rebbe, bar none. You'll never change my mind. You're sending your most precious commodity, your diamonds, to a Rebbe to polish them. And other professions are making 10 times a Rebbe. Unfortunately, in the world that we live in, they don't make what they should, but they should make, bar none, the highest salary. So you could only imagine what it was like to return $100,000 or just south of it. He returns it to the lady. She is so overwhelmed. In fact, when the story broke after this Shabbos on Sunday night, the CNN local affiliate, WTNH, NH I assume is for New Haven, started to carry it. Then CNN started to carry it, and it became a media sensation, the fellow who returned all of this money. In fact, in the postcard that she sent him after to say thank you, she says, "Dear Noah, I can't thank you enough for your honesty and integrity. I don't think there are too many people in this world that would have done what you did. I believe that there are still good people left in the crazy world we live in. You certainly are one of them." And she ends by saying, "With my whole family, my sincerest thanks, I will forever be grateful." And she signs her name. Now, I cannot tell you that every time we are glot like this fellow will, the story is going to be picked up and blitzed around the media. Whether it is or it isn't, it certainly made me stop and notice or take stock. Are we glot? The tremendous Kiddush Hashem that came about from what this fellow and his wife and Kinderlach did is really beyond any words I could tell you. Now, a maisa that happened 2 weeks ago, Thursday night again, you might be familiar with it, and I'm told by many people that this fellow Isaac Thiel, who's the central figure in the story, lived here and still has a house in North Miami Beach. But he was riding, I'm not so familiar with the subway system in New York, but they say it could be, and I'm just reading from the article, a bleak and dreary place. And he's riding there, and a black person in a hoodie falls asleep on his shoulder. And a fellow commuter says, "Let me wake him up," to which he says, and then the yarmulke in the picture is very noticeable. Not on Isaac Thiel, I mean. He says, "Let him sleep. He's had a long day." We've all been there, right? And later, when the Q train finally reaches Newquirk Avenue, which I guess they say is from in Brooklyn, Ditmas Park, that's where he gets off. He gently wakes up the man and disembarks. Now, it was an uncomfortable position for him to be in. Not psychologically, but physically. If someone is resting on your shoulder and you can't move, that could be uncomfortable. The story would have ended there, except the fellow passenger was so blown away that this Orthodox Jew had no problem with someone falling asleep on him that he took a picture on his cell phone and he put it on social media. It became a media sensation instantaneously. A Jewish man caring for a young black man in a hoodie on the subway tugged at the heartstrings of anyone who saw the picture. The picture gained in popularity, shared on the internet, discovered by the media. Isaac Thiel became a worldwide celebrity, praise and approval from virtually everyone. And because his yarmulke identified him as a frum yid, it became a first-class Kiddush Hashem. Some of the papers, the New York Daily News, Isaac Thiel was just trying to help out a fellow New Yorker. The photo has made this Orthodox Jew a global celebrity. Huffington Post, sleeping stranger subway pic redefines empathy and is a lesson in being good. From another paper, napping man on stranger's shoulder renews our faith in humanity. After just a couple of days, 1.3 million people expressed their overwhelming approval of that picture, and that's only a fraction of the many millions who saw it around the world. So as the article ends, in a world where the news is mostly negative and generally focuses on scandals and misfortune, how sweet is that story? So if you think about a world after Haiti and after the Philippines and after returning a wad of money and after a picture taken, that's a world that makes us realize we can be glatt. So it got me thinking, what gets in the way? What is it that starts to, really dull our senses and blur our vision between glatt and not, right or wrong? And I am very tempted to give some examples, but as many as I give, there are bound to be others that I should have given and left out. So generally I'll ask, what gets in the way? Perhaps the answer is from the famous pshat of the Brisker Rav. The Brisker Rav says in the Sovim, in describing how we viewed the idol worshipping of the Mitzrayim, "Vatiru shikutseim ve'eis giluleim," we saw their detestable idols, giluleim, eitz ve'evin, kesef ve'zahav, of eitz ve'evin and of kesef ve'zahav. The Brisker Rav has a different pshat, and I see, looking at people's expressions, they're familiar with it. It is a classic pshat. The first time you saw something that was eglot, their idols, shikutseim giluleim, you were repulsed by it. Giluleim, you'll forgive me, in a shul. Giluleim is from the word gulal. That's the waste of an animal. The next time you saw the same thing that wasn't glot, or worse than not glot, eitz ve'evin, it didn't bother you as much. It was only like stone and wood. It just ain't so bad. And then the third time you saw it, it was kesef ve'zahav. Wow, that's something. What a chap. The first time you might be driving on a highway and genuinely, and I mean it sincerely, with your children, you might see a billboard or a sign and you feel it, shikutseim giluleim, you're repulsed by it. But a few times later, all of a sudden, it dulls your senses. The acute sensitivity of how it should affect me isn't there. And then it spirals to become Eitz Ve'Evin, and before you know it, Chesed Ve'Zohav. We're not only tolerant of it, but we start perhaps even finding ways to allow it, appreciate it, Cholila Ve'Oid. That's bad news. That's where the lines of being glot have clearly been crossed. If you take a look in Parshas Vayetze, someone told me this pshat last week. I have said it since multiple times. That's how sensational I think it is. And each time I ask the audience, if you know whose pshat it is, feel free to tell me. I'd like to know. I mentioned this pshat last night in New York. I made the same offer. I made it a couple nights ago when I spoke in Aventura. If you know whose pshat it is, you don't have to tell me now. You could wait till about 10:05. You'll let me know then, but I would like to know. It's the pshat I mentioned to you in the office the day before yesterday. The Pasuk says that Perek Lamed Aleph, the beginning, Parshas Vayetze, Yaakov is telling his wives why we've got to leave. It's time to go. So he says, because I see es pinei avichen, which means, he says, roya anoichi es pinei avichen, I see the disposition of your father, and a nenu elai kismol shel shoim. It's not the way it used to be. Now, literally, that means he's not treating me the same way. So he tells his wives, we've got to leave ASAP. Someone mentioned to me this pshat. Perhaps Yaakov Avinu was saying something else. He tells his wives, roya anoichi es pinei avichen, I see your father's disposition. I see what he's all about. And einenu elai kismol shel shoim. It's not to me the way it used to be. I used to be repulsed. It used to be unconscionable and reprehensible, everything that he stood for. And I felt it, I sensed it, and I knew it. But if now it's coming to the point where roya anoichi es pnei avichen, I see what he's about, and a nenu a like his small shel shoim, it's not to me the way it was, i.e., maybe if we stay here, it's going to start to dull my senses. Or to quote the Briskerov, it's going to start becoming Eitz Ve'Evin, Chesed Ve'Zohav. A nenu a lie, I'm not affected by it the way I used to be. He says, it's time to leave now. Because when a person is surrounded by something, as long as Rabbi Lef mentioned the other night here in Shul, you create the Mishpachei Seyem Yotzum in Ateva. You create the aura of the Beis Knesset, the Beis Medrash, the Yeshiva, the Koilel, where you go, then it will always be Ba'im Mitzrayimah. But the minute it becomes Ba'u, we're complacent, we're tolerant, we appreciate, you've crossed the line of being glot. And so Yaakov is telling his wives, since I see your father's disposition, and it used to affect me one way, but now perhaps if we stay, it will be a nenu elaik yismol shel shoim, I won't be affected. The acute sensitivity of the way I knew is repulsive. When you think that that's starting to wear off, you have to leave. By the way, because they left, that is the raya that we find in the beginning of the next parsha of Vayishlach, when the Pasuk says, Im lovan garti, Rashi says, Tayog mitzvah shamarti, and of course everybody knows, lo lamadati mi maisav haroyim. And everybody asks, many ask the kash, if you were shamer mitzvahs, then isn't it obvious that you weren't loimid mi maisav haroyim? Vice tois not, you could be a shamer mitzvahs and still be loimid from the maisav haroyim of a rasha. Where did Rashi get this from, that lo lamadati mi maisav haroyim? He got it from the pshat in the pasuk we just told you. Yaakov Avinu was able to tell Esav, send a message to him, that I lived with Lavan, v'loy lamadati mi maisav haroyim, and I was not affected by his maisav haroyim. What's the raya? because Roya Nechi Pnei Avichem Enenu Elike Yismol Shel Shoyim. Let's get out now. If we get out before we're affected, it's a raya that we were not loymed mi maisav haroyim. So perhaps before a person can change or become glot, or if you think you're already, if I think I'm already glot, become super glot, perhaps the first thing a person has to do is identify the problem. And clearly from the pshat of the Brisker Rav and the next pshat I mentioned, the problem seems to be that when you see something and you don't properly surround yourself and fortify yourself, you become tolerant. And you see it a few more times, and then you become more than tolerant. And as I said, that could be in an area, as we mentioned earlier, of Shmiras Hainayim. It could be in an area of Tznius. It could be in a standard of Shmiras Shabbos, in a standard of Kashrus. It could be in Kedushas Beis HaKnesses. I've spoken a number of times lately how I and others feel, and forgive me for using this as the opportunity, how I and others feel about when there is not the proper covet in the Beis Knesses. I'm not even talking about, we've spoken many times about being quiet and not talking in shul. But we're also unfortunately talking about a cell phone ringing, a person texting or responding. Those things are shikutseyem gilulehem. Don't let anybody ever tell you differently. That's it, period. I remember hearing a little while ago from one of the wonderful speakers that we used to come to shul to daven, and now you'll see so many people who are using their hands instead of davening to text. They're busy with their hands. He says, that's the pshat on the pasuk. We used to come for Kol Kol Yaakov, and now our shul may become Yadayim Yaday Esav. Cholila. Having said that sentence, I almost feel badly that I had to say it. But these things, I even once had the, some may say the chutzpah to speak about it, and others may say the courage to speak about it. Proper parking. And even some went out and said, there are so many things to address, that's what he's talking about? That's my decision. To go ahead and to, I just mentioned the pshat that you shared with me, Reb Tuvia, this past Shabbos. To go ahead, and again, I feel almost a little funny trivializing one thing about parking, but as I said a moment ago, you could pick umpteen examples. They're endless. Double parking, parking in a handicapped space, parking in a way that you block the driveway for someone, thinking, but it's just for a minute. It's none of those. It's wrong. And so whether it's the parking or the cell phones or the texting or the emails or even worse, I shouldn't have put them all in the same group, but Cholila talking in shul, certainly during Chazaras Hashatz, we know what Halacha says about that. Whether it's an area of Tznius, I really know that we've spoken about the area in the past. If it's something that we would be more makbid on, then others would want it as well. Tznius that we should be able to feel and to walk about comfortably. All of these things, if a person allows them time and time again to dull his senses, they've clearly crossed the line. Then tonight's topic would not be, are we glot? Tonight's topic would be, we are anything but glot. We clearly have gone from Chikutseim Giluleim to Kesef Izahov very quickly. So what we've done so far is clearly identified what gets in the way. Who does that to us? I mentioned that a few months ago on Shabbat Shuva. The pshat that you showed me and sent me yesterday when I was in New York, based on a pshat from the Baal Shem Tov. I say based on the pshat of the Baal Shem Tov because he asks the kash a little bit differently. The Gemara in Shabbos, Ayin Hey, Amid Aleph, on the very bottom, wants to know, when you do Shechita, what are you Chayev? What did you do when you did Shechita? The opinion of Rav is, you were Tzeveya, you colored. You colored the Basar of the animal, you colored the meat, the skin of the animal, and therefore Shechita was a violation of which one of the 39 Melochos? Tzeveya. Based on the Baal Shem Tov, the Kasha is HaShoichet. The one who's the perpetual Shoichet, who does such a job of slaughtering us, the Yetzahara. Mishuma Mechayev, how does he get us every time? Like Ribbono Shel Olam, how is he the Shoichet, the Yetzahara, so successful? The answer is Tzeveya. He colors a picture. And let me tell you, he's an outstanding artist. The way that the Yetzer Hara, who's the ultimate Shoichet, the one who slaughters, and the one who has the ability to do Shechita on us time and time again, how does he get us to be Chayev Tzeveya? He colors a picture. In fact, the Baal Shem Tov says he'll do it to the point on a delectable canvas until you believe an Aveira is a mitzvah and a mitzvah is an Aveira. That's how good he is. I'll tell you what that artist looks like. It goes something like this. I've heard many times, I know you're not supposed to speak Lashon Hara. That's true. But about her, it's Poshita Mitzvah. I know what you don't know, and Agam that I know, Sefer Chofetz Chaim, back and forth, there I'm supposed to, it's a mitzvah. Or it's the one that when it comes to the area of Tzniyus, I know that this and that shouldn't be worn, but it was meant in that climate or this climate, but in this particular climate, and if I get out of the car, I have to run a certain speed, so I have to have the flexibility to move, so therefore it's a mitzvah to wear this. Or how about to the business person who you ask, isn't what you're doing unethical? Yes, yes. But do you know how much tzedakah I'll be giving? That's the shoichet being a tzeveya. And unfortunately, at times, he's extremely successful. And again, I'm only honing in on the smallest potpourri of topics. It virtually expands to anything. You either are glatt or you aren't. I think it happened with Rabbi Elia Meir Bloch, that someone complained, I don't understand the religious Jews that are dishonest in business and unethical. I don't understand those religious Jews. Rabbi Elia Meir said, I don't understand the religious Jews that drive on Shabbos, eat on Yom Kippur, and don't keep kosher. So the first fellow said, those aren't religious, and Rabbi Elia Meir said, neither are the ones that you described. That's a shaila. Just ask yourself, are we glatt? And if a person thinks that there's an area that they are successful, think of one that could use to be improved. But it's clearly something that, especially in light of the fact that media sensation would have you believe otherwise, it behooves us to get right. Having identified what the problem is and who the source of the problem is, I guess the last part of the shir is what to do about it. I heard a little while ago a story about a little girl who wanted from one of these dollar stores a $2 pearls, you know, the fake cheap imitation. She got it and it became a part of her. She was inseparable. Her father often would put her in at night, and let's make up the name of the little girl was Tzipora. He said to her one night, Tzipora, do you love me? She said, Tati, of course I love you. He said, then give me your pearls. She said, you could have anything, Tati, but not my pearls. This girl and her cheap, fake imitation pearls were inseparable, and every few nights the father said the same thing. Tzipora, do you love me? Of course I love you. Well, then give me your pearls and anything but my pearls. This went on a bunch of times. After a number of weeks, he comes into the room and he sees his little Tzipora is on the edge of her bed with tears coming down. And in her hand, she has clenched her cheap fake pearls. She opens it up and she says, Tati, I'm ready to give them to you. At which point the father takes the cheap fake pearls with one hand, and simultaneously with the other hand he takes out of his jacket pocket a blue velvet bag and pulls out a strand of magnificent real pearls and says, "Here, Tziporla, these are for you. Obviously, my dear daughter, I had them all along. I first needed to see that you were going to give up the cheap imitation before I can give you the real thing." And the Ribbono Shel Olam says the same thing. Sometimes we are so involved and lured, L-U-R-E-D, with the cheap imitation, something fake and something that's meaningless. And the Ribbono Shel Olam just says, if I see that you'll at least make an effort or an interest to give it up, I'll give you the real deal. But I first need to see the interest, the step, the willingness to be glatt. And if you can give up the cheap, the fake, the imitation, all those things that we mentioned tonight, or at least start, then at the same time, the Ribbono Shel Olam says, now I'll give you the real deal. Obviously, time is very short, but if I had with the maybe 7 or 8 minutes we have left, and that's without going over, because I heard last week, from last week, one could go to even 10 or 10:15, but I don't know that we'll do that. If I had to hone in on the best way to show the Yetzer Hara, you're not really much of an artist. To me, you're actually a little bit more like a kid doing finger painting. I'd have to say it comes from a pshat of the Avnei Nezer. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah says, Isaifa lav safra, isafra lav saifa, which literally means that if a person has the sefer, they don't have the sword, but if they have the sword, they don't have the sefer. What does the Gemara mean? The Avnei Nezer tells us, we understand Misa Saif as someone who's killed because their head is separated from their body. The Avnei Nezer says, unfortunately, people can be alive and well, or at least healthy in the physical sense, but they're a walking dead Misa Saif. Because if a person sits and learns Torah, but the Torah learning just remains north of their neck, and never becomes Ashrei Misha Boilakan V'Talmudoi Biyodoi, the person's walking, but it's a Misa Saif. Their head is brilliant. Their body learned nothing. So if the person learned, but their midos are still grub, then what did they accomplish? Says the Avnei Nezer, Isaifa, if you're suffering Misa Saif while you're alive, your head's in one place and your body is clueless, Lav Safra, Vaistoisi, you didn't really learn. And Isafra, if you've really learned Lav Saifa, then you don't have to worry about Misa Saif because you learned, you're the real deal, you're a Glata Yid, and it became a part of your very being. We said a little while ago, vis-a-vis Torah learning, that it says, Yikorahim Ipninim, that Torah is even more precious than pearls, than diamonds. Chazal Darshan Mipninim means the Kohen Gadol Lifnai V'Lifnim. Not Pninim as pearls and diamonds, but Torah learning that saturates who you are is even greater than the Kohen Gadol Yom HaKippurim and the Kodesh HaKadoshim Lifnai V'Lifnim. So at a Sheva Brachos in a particular country, the Menahel was very proud that his Talmidah was marrying a Choshev, a younger man. He said over this Vart. And he said that somebody once asked him, Shlomo Zalman, why did Chazal have to create the Pshat, Mipninim is Miloshoin Lifnai Vilifnim? Why not just say Mipninim, that Yikorahim Mipninim, Torah is greater than pearls and diamonds. Why'd you have to change Mipninim to this new definition? Reb Shlomo Zalman answered, would you say that Torah is more valuable than Avatiach? Torah is so zis, it's better than watermelon. You wouldn't say that. The same way you wouldn't fathom to say that, you don't say that Pninim, Torah, is greater than pearls and diamonds. You can't equate it with watermelon. You can't equate it with diamonds. The only thing you can come close to equating it with is Lifnai Vilifnin. There was a diamond dealer who was listening to this speech. He naturally took umbrage with it. Then he gets up and he says to the Menahel, imagine the chutzpah, he says, if Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach could say that pshat, then I don't think he ever saw a diamond in his life. This is from a diamond dealer. At which point the Menahel, and good for him, turns to the fellow and says, sir, whether or not Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach saw a diamond, I don't know. But one thing I do know, you never saw Reb Shlomo Zalman. Because if you would have seen Reb Shlomo Zalman, if you would see what a life of Safra is, you wouldn't have a kasha about comparing Torah to a diamond. I don't know if you saw a diamond. I know you never saw Reb Shlomo Zalman. And so when a person is zoicha not only to learn Torah, but to live Torah, Ashrei mi shebo lekan v'talmuda biyodai, they can not only remain glatt, they can bring that to a community and they can make sure that the Giluleihem, Shikutzeim Giluleihem, stays somewhere else. It's taka apropos that this Mishmar is being given on behalf and for the Kollel, because that's one of the many things that a Kollel accomplishes. Just by watching the young alike, of course learning with them, but just by watching them, by osmosis, by being near them, you become a person that understands right from wrong, glatt or not. And those lines remain clearly marked. That's what you get from a life of Safra, from a life of not only learning Torah, but living Torah, and looking and learning from our Gedolim. It doesn't take the greatest step. Person thinks it's monumental. Eventually, it says, everyone translates that to mean in 1 hour. The Yesod of Reb Tzadok is that you translate a word the way it's used the first time in the Torah as well. Where's the first time that the word Shah is used? By the rejection of Kayin's Karbon, El Kayin ve'el Minchosoi loy Shah. He didn't turn to Kayin's Karbon. So you see, the new definition of a Shah is a turn. And that's what the Gemara means. Yesh koina oilomoi b'shoa achas. You could acquire your glatta world in one turn. It's a turn, a resolve, a commitment. All of these things are a big deal. So if we've already defined how it behooves every one of us to be glatt, and what a world looks like that's not glatt, who gets in the way, what we can do about it, how we not only learn Torah, live Torah, but surround ourselves by Torah, it seems like an easy turn to being glatt. So I'll just end with one maisa. In case a person still wants to know if all of these shalos, these turns that bring us closer, are they really such a big deal? There's a kollel couple, I believe, perhaps in the northern part of Eretz Yisrael, but they worked for Lev La'achim, the Kiruv organization. They had a beautiful family, and one day their three-year-old, it was either before or after the upsharon, went to cheder, and in the middle of the day he complained he wasn't feeling well. He went to lie down, and a little while later this yingala was nifter. And so the parents had to sit shiva. In middle of Shiva, the younger man who's sitting Shiva for his three-year-old gets a phone call. He excuses himself from the men who are around him, and he comes back and he says, it was one of eight boys. He's in the middle of working on eight boys to be makar of them. They're not religious, and he's working on bringing them back. And one was representing the other seven, and he said, I want you to know, Rabbi, we're calling, because I and the other seven, the eight of us in total, we heard your three-year-old passed away. This Shabbat, we're going to keep Shabbos for the first time, the eight of us. We're going to keep our first Shabbos. So he told us over. one of the people there, sometimes unfortunately a person says something highly insensitive, and I'm being kind when I say that. One of the people there said to the father who just said that the other is representing the other seven on that eight are going to keep their first Shabbat, he said something like, what does it mean? They'll keep this Shabbos for your three-year-old, and then, as if to say, is it such a big deal? They probably won't keep another Shabbos ever again. It's nice, but like, does it really mean anything? At which point the father turned to this man and said, you want me to answer that question? Do you know what I would give to have my three-year-old back for one Shabbos? Do you know what I would give to have my three-year-old hold my hand walking home from shul one more Shabbos on Friday night? You know what I'd give up to have him bounce on my knees Shabbos singing Zmiras? You know what I'd give to have my child back for one more Shabbos? And now the Ribbono Shel Olam is getting back eight children for one Shabbos, and you don't think it's a big deal? Believe me, it's a big deal. The Ribbono Shel Olam is getting eight children back for Shabbos. It's a big deal. And I think that's what we have to tell ourselves. Every sha'a, every turn, every commitment, every resolve, obviously the commitment for a ben Torah and for a yungaman, for a balabos, for someone who is religious many years, someone who's not religious many years, everyone's commitment's going to be different. But let there be a turn, let there be a commitment, let there be a resolve, let there be something. Believe me, just ask the father of the three-year-old, every step that brings someone closer to the Ribbono Shel Olam is a big deal. And in the schus that we came to identify the problem and to at least start seeing what there is to do about the problem, to surround ourselves by Talmidei Chachamim, by Yungel Light, by people who learn Torah, live Torah, breathe Torah, love Torah, then hopefully that will help each and every one of us find our proper sha'a. And in that schus, you see, I don't think the lady in the beginning of the shir by the Levaya knew that it was going to turn into a mishmar shir. But she's right when she asked me, oh, you're glatt? It got me thinking. Every one of us should ask ourselves, are we glatt? And whatever we do that needs improving, we should improve. Whatever we do well, we should do even better. And in that schus, we should do the reason that we are in this world, to be Mekadesh Shem Shemayim Barabim, that everything that we do should bring about a beautiful, beautiful Kiddush Hashem Barabim.